Jeremy and Mike before the meeting. What we're basically just going to do is just turn it over to you guys to let you introduce yourself and just talk a little bit about the work that you've been doing with RDF, Fedora, Bibframe, anything you know you guys want to touch upon or talk about since we're in the throes of thinking about how to migrate from Fedora 3 to Fedora 4. So,
okay.
So just go ahead and turn it over to you guys. And if you want to share your screen at all, yeah, feel free.
Okay. So this is Jeremy Nelson. If you don't know a little bit of background about myself, before I became a librarian out of college, I worked at a couple different software companies and then went back and received my MLS degree from University of Illinois. And then worked at University of Utah for a couple of years, and then worked for 5 years at 4 years at Western State College here. And then since 2010, I've been at Colorado College. Since I've been at Colorado College, I've been really kind of exploring different NoSQL data stores and databases, particularly in how they could be used with bibliographic information. So my first sort of foray into this was using the NoSQL data store called Redis. And I'm still working on Redis. I just finished up my second book, Mastering Redis for Packet Publishing, that's coming out in a couple months. And in that, Redis is a great technology, but there are some limitations. It's great for use as a caching layer, and some of the work I've done with like DPLA and Library of Congress has been seeing how we can maybe use Redis as a linked data fragment caching layer. And so I recently at DPLA Fest a couple weeks ago gave a presentation on some of my work there. So when I started at, related more specifically to Fedora and Digital Archives, when I started at Colorado College, we were part of a consortium, the Colorado Alliance of Research Libraries. And our digital repository at the time was an early version of Fedora, maybe 3.4 or something to that effect. And it was using the Fez, sort of one of the very first front ends for Fedora. And I was engaged with Carl, that consortium, as they migrated to Islandora within a consortium. So from about 2012, I would say, 2011, 2012, we migrated to Islandora using Fedora at that point, 3.7. Then unfortunately, because of the economics of actually providing sort of that hosted service, the consortium decided to drop out, and then Islandora and Fedora became a responsibility for us. So we've been hosting our own Islandora 3.8, or Fedora 3.8 with the Islandora 7 since about last year. So I'll go ahead and kind of show you. So this is share screen. So here's our Fedora repository that we have running locally. We have about 12,000 digital objects, and there's a wide range of material in there. Here's our Fedora front end to this, and so not too much customization on the Islandora side. We're running into some problems was trying to get Solr set up right. And eventually, I just became so frustrated and decided to port over a Django front end that I was using on top of Solr to use the Python Flask web framework, and then using Elasticsearch and replace that out and still keeping Fedora. And so right now, we have an internal beta. So this is available on campus. Soon it'll be available to the wide world. And so this is our actual replacement for Islandora is this new Flask-based interface. And so the search here is running against Elasticsearch, and we're indexing all the mods XML data streams that are associated with each of these objects. And you can see we can kind of go in, and here's the mod's metadata that we pulled out and now are storing in our Elasticsearch. But now that we're at this sort of point in that process, we're looking at migrating this our repository to Fedora 4. Now, fortunately, you know, this is where Mike and I sort of come in. Back in 2014, myself and another individual named Aaron Schmidt of Influx Design, we received a contract with the Library of Congress to build for them a linked data catalog based on BibFrame. And in that, all that resulted in this bibcat.org, which is a current pilot. And behind the scenes, we converted Mark XML to BibFrame RDF, stored part of it into, or stored it as a triple store into Fedora, and then from there extracted that into an Elasticsearch. So what's really powering this is our Elasticsearch search index here. So if I'm go to Mark Twain, so there's a limited amount of data that we use. We use a test collection from the Library of Congress. So it was primarily composed of Mark records related to Mark Twain and the Bible. So it's very sort of skewed here. But you can actually kind of go in and see some of this. So here's the actual linked data that was converted into a JSON object that we could then index into Elasticsearch. So this is sort of what is being stored in Elasticsearch on the back end. So this sort of stack is running, and the reason we were able to really do this is it's running using a Docker containers. And so Elasticsearch is in its own container, Fedora, and the triple store is in its another container. And then our Flask application is yet in a third container. And that way, it's really easy to bring up and manage operationally. So sort of from this work on using Fedora 4, and we eventually decided on BlazeGraph as a triple store, we progressed, and now Mike and I are working on this new framework for manipulating and creating RDF applications. And so we actually have a product on that allows you to issue open badges, and this open badge, and I'll have Mike go through and kind of show you some of the details on that. But what's really exciting about this is that we're actually using RDF to define our application. So our data itself sort of drives the application. And it, as part of this framework, the RDF triple store, you dynamically generate your forms. We also have APIs that are attached to that. And this is all being driven by how you structure your RDF triple store. So let's see. So I'm going to kind of turn this over to Mike, and he can maybe talk about the RDF framework and the open badges, sort of that RDF work that we're currently working on.
Hi, I'm Mike Stabile. I'm not a librarian by trade, or my background is I went to Naval Academy, got a degree in physics, didn't really ever do anything with physics, did the military for about 6 years, did some government contracting and various other odds and ends, and went back on active duty for a little bit and just finished up with that when I was working with Jeremy on some of the library stuff, and got into helping him out with the end stages of that BibCat 1.0, and then looking into the RDF database. So before I get into any real detail, can I just do a quick query on what's your guys' understanding of RDF? I mean, what level of knowledge do you guys have on that? Because some people, it's completely new to them. Some people are pretty in-depth. So I just want to get a sense so I'm talking at the right level.
I can chime in first here just to say I think we have a wide different experiences on the call here with RDF. I think we have some folks probably who have zero experience with RDF, although we've been definitely talking about it in this working group over the past month. So at least there's been exposure to some of the terms and understanding about folks, ideas about like blank notes and those kinds of things.
What about SQL?
Implementing it, we haven't really implemented too much anything, I think, in the way of a triple store database here. But SQL, again, I think there's a wide range of responses here on that end. Some of us use it daily, others may not ever, use SQL. I don't think, we have a mixture of librarians and technologists on the call.
Okay. All right.
Others might want to chime in. I don't know if you have anything else to say, Mike or...
Yeah, I would. This is Lisa. I would agree with Mark that my knowledge of RDF is very conceptual, and we haven't put it into practice, so I haven't worked with it. SQL is much more familiar, although I still don't work with it every day.
Okay. Well, let me... Just chime in if I'm talking at a too high of a level or too low of a level, because a year ago, RDF was pretty new to me as well. And there's a couple different technologies out there nowadays regarding database structures, to the whole NoSQL movement, to which RDF and things like Elasticsearch can be categorized in. Then there's the old relational SQL model. For framework to start with, you can think of the SQL, I think of SQL in terms of like Excel worksheets, and there's usually a column in an Excel worksheet that tells how it relates that information to a column in another Excel worksheet, and all that stuff becomes relational. So that if I have a worksheet with all my list of people in it, and then I have another worksheet with all the departments that exist, and I can tie those two pieces of information together so that you have a relational model. And if I make a change in one worksheet, it updates the other worksheet when those two things relate. So once you start stepping out of the SQL model and you go into the NoSQL model, there's two paths that tend to happen. One is you start looking at a lot of them is more of a key value store. It's a more of a flat document, almost a reversion back to a MARC record type setting, and it becomes basically a flat document, which is like Elasticsearch. If you're familiar with Elasticsearch, it stores everything as a JSON JavaScript object notation document. It's a flat document. And what that does is allows things like Elasticsearch and other indexers to do very, very quick and responsive searching on that. But the problem, the challenge once you go to a flat structure is you lose all those relational context and structure that a SQL database has. So that, and if you want to make a change, you have to update all those documents on those changes because everything's being indexed that way. Now, if you go into the RDF model, now you've actually gone into a relational model almost on steroids, in my opinion. It's that you've taken what would typically be an ID column in a relational database model, where it's usually an auto-generated number 1 to n, and now you've define what they call a URI, which looks a lot like a URL. And all that really is a unique identifier, just like a GUID or a simple integer ID column in an SQL database. But what the RDF allows you to do is allows you to create that almost universal identifier that can then be shared across the web. And when you go and you look at these search engines and Google and these different vocabularies out there, they can then read those pages if the page is marked up, or go to the various Sparkle endpoints and pull in information if they know how those identifiers match up. So once you start moving into that model, there's a greater potential for being able to pull resources external to your data set from across the web. So if I want to search Wikipedia and pull information from Wikipedia, there's a RDF Sparkle endpoint called DBpedia that can go in, that you can go and query against and pull sets of data into your data store or dynamically load it into your web page if you want, as long as you can consistently say this key equals this key. For example, I was in part of this learning process, if we were looking at just languages, and there's a lot of different ways to identify the 400 and some odd languages that are pretty much in use today out of the 5,000 historical languages. You have your ISO 6391, 6392, you have these typical identifiers, so you can match those up, and then you also have the URIs that'll basically connect to other different websites that store information about English. But you can go and then search and pull all that stuff and consolidate it down to one concept. So, see where to go next. So, when you're looking at your repositories, Fedora 3.8 or before Fedora 4, where it wasn't an RDF-based type model, if you're looking at things like they'll store a lot of the, if you upload a digital object and you want to say who the author was for that digital object or the composer, you'll store that information typically as a string, that's a person's name. Once you do that, you've lost all ability to relate other than by some type of string matching algorithm. Becomes very, very inconsistent once you start doing larger and larger sets of data. So once you move to an RDF model, what it'll allow you to do is allow you to assign an identifier, basically a GUID, a global identifier for that, whoever you say that author it is. And then once you go out to the web and you start finding more and more resources that are the same as that author, it allows you to do what they call an RDF. You'll add a tag that's called OWL same as, which just basically says, hey, this is, John Smith from Virginia is the one that was in Jamestown Vice, John Smith, who's just the mechanic down the road. But it'll allow you to sit there and say, to start tagging those resources. So when you want to go pull out, connect other resources outside in the web and pull in additional information about them, you'll have some identifiers. So I don't know what you guys are doing like with your digital repositories. I know with CC, Jeremy's saying they're uploading a lot of students' theses and so forth. And right now in their current model, when they're uploading like their theses, I may have Jane Doe in there and it's just stored as a string, but I don't have any of the other information about Jane Doe, like when she went to school there, things that are gonna let me know that 10, 15 years down the road, if Jane Doe is famous, I can go easily back and relate her to whoever the current famous persona is or so forth, or differentiate between Jane Doe A and Jane Doe B. So that's one advantage of moving to an RDF model. The other advantage of an RDF model is based on a lot of flexibility. So in the relational database model, what you typically find is you'll define your tables, and then within your tables, you'll go in and have your definitions, and you'll have that ID column, and then if you have a table of people, first name, last name, and so on and so forth. And I have to know that who that person is, and so on and so forth. You continue to build it out. With the RDF model is your table definitions you're not as stringent on defining those tables. And if you change how those tables and properties that are in fields within those tables, you have a lot more flexibility where it won't destroy your application or destroy your data set when you add in different properties. So like, let's add a table, a list of all my digital objects, and all of a sudden I want to add in a new property or a new field that tracks, you know, the date it was last, the date it was last viewed. You can easily add that into an RDF model without having to go in and really worry about if it's going to destroy some of the relationship integrity that's built into the SQL relational database model. Is everybody following me on that point? Am I giving you too much, or is that kind of what you guys are looking for overview of RDF?
Yeah, this is very helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think...
go ahead.
So, Jeremy?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm still here. one thing I would just add, so you may hear what Mike is talking about as that unique identifier. Typically in RDF, you have your statements as your structure, and there you have three elements to your statement. You have your subject or your ID, you have your predicate, and then you have your object. And so in the predicate, you can include a URI that references your vocabulary, and then your object can be either another URI. It can be what we call a blank node, which is just basically an internal unique identifier or placeholder within a individual RDF graph. And then you have an object, which can be either a blank node, a URI, or a literal value. So.
Yeah, so as just a kind of follow-up question to what you guys have been talking about, I'm wondering... So you're talking about you're investigating now or using Fedora for some of these projects?
For Bitcat, where we're using Fedora 4, mm-hmm. and then we just built a brand new product on top of our platform. And it uses Fedora 4 to store the sort of open badge that's a digital badge, and we're storing that Fedora 4. But the power really comes from its associated triple store. So it's sort of a shift from thinking of being everything focused in Fedora to your primary source of information is in your triple store. And then Fedora is there to manage your data streams and provide all of its audit tracking and all those functionality that Fedora really excels at. But the real power of the application comes from the RDF triple store.
Okay, and just a couple of follow-up questions. One, you mentioned open badges. That's actually a new term to me. I don't know what is that. For authentication, or what are open badges?
So open badges is a project by Mozilla Foundation, the same group that does mm-hmm. Firefox. And it's just a way for institutions to provide a digital credential for either an educational or other accomplishment.
Okay.
And so they have actually a linked data vocabulary based on schema.org.
Okay.
We basically took that vocabulary, used it within our RDF framework to create an open badge application. So now, for example, I sort of as a sideline do some professional technology training on Redis, mm-hmm. which is a key value open NoSQL data store. And I've issued badges for people who've completed that course, for example. And then you can, share your open badge accomplishment on any of your social networks that you want. And it's a way to sort of to provide a way to acknowledge accomplishment.
Yeah, so it's like a reputation. So
if you go, I think, to openbadges.org,
okay.
It'll take you to... that website. So we basically took that as a sort of a test case for this Fedora 4 RDF triple source stack that I collectively call a semantic server.
Okay. And it sounds like, so you're, with Fedora 4, you'd be using an external triple store, and you mentioned BlazeGraph. Is that correct?
Right.
Did I get that right in my notes? Okay.
Yeah, that's right. BlazeGraph. Yep.
How are you syncing between Fedora and BlazeGraph? Like, what's handling that? Because we talked to someone previously who mentioned working with Apache Camel, I think is what it's called.
Right, yeah. So okay. Apache Camel is sort of a messaging broker. Mm-hmm. And so to keep everything sync with BlazeGraph, we have a camel route that just links that. So it just pre-populates a triple store.
Okay.
So our approach is that your triple store actually has a lot more information, a lot more triples than actually was stored in Fedora. Okay. Because there's a lot of things that's not necessary to store in Fedora. You know, if I'm making an authority assertion about a creator of a digital object, I don't necessarily need to have just a representation Fedora, because that should just be really a URI that links to it. So that's sort of been our approach in the software stack that we're using. And so again, everything's being managed using Docker to connect those pieces together.
And I don't want to hog the conversation. I'll let other folks chime in a second. But could you also walk us through, you'd mentioned in one of your earlier experiments, you know, using Mods XML. Are you using that in, you know, Mods RDF flavor now, or is it really more about the JSON document that you're getting into Elasticsearch? Or what's the data that's actually going into BlazeGraph around the descriptive metadata, I guess is what I want to know, and what vocabularies you might be using?
Right. So all our work with the Library of Congress has all been with the BibFrame RDF vocabulary. Okay. And so that, in terms of our BibCat, uses BibFrame for that metadata. The mods metadata that I'm using with our current, we'll just call it, you know, this sort of transition IR that uses Fedora 3.8. There, I'm taking that mods XML and then converting it into a JSON object that then we index into Elasticsearch. Now, looking forward, there's a couple of options, right? We could, and I'm still sort of debating what would be the best route, but my sort of inclination is when we are ready to migrate our Fedora 3.8 to Fedora 4, our semantic server stack, is that we're going to actually probably do a, you know, one-off mods to BibFrame mapping. Okay. And use BibFrame in a sort of our final semantic server instead of using mods RDF.
So your BibFrame data goes into your BlazeGraph.
Right. And but then we could also store, you know, triples that are directly associated with a digital object in Fedora 4 as well.
Yeah, outside of it. Okay. Okay. I lied. I'll ask one more follow-up question. How happy are you with BibFrame and BibFrame 2, I guess, recently? I mean, is that, you think that'll work? Right. For, I mean, it seems like that it works for all your bibliographic metadata.
The Library of Congress just last week released their 2.0 version of BibFrame. So Mike and I are in discussions about what that will look like. I feel that between BibFrame, and I should also mention, I've been using schema.org as well as sort of the other, like, bib vocabulary. Mm-hmm. So the nice thing is about RDF triple stores is that I can use both vocabularies or, you know, one to N, mm-hmm. and just use those triples to describe exactly how I need my object to be. And then the relationships between them. So I'll let Mike talk about his impressions of BibFrame, because there are some issues though that we've discussed. But
so here I'll share this link with you guys. This is I don't know if you guys got that. That's on our Jeremy and I's website. It's part of our documentation that we're building for our framework, but it just kind of summarizes some of the essential RDF concepts that I've kind of collused from reading various documents and so forth. So you're welcome to peruse through that and give you some ideas. The way the application works that I have in there is is what we're developing. So as far as BibFrame itself, it's still a work in progress, even with 2.0. I think there are some probably some political things that are going on and some stuff going back and forth between people that don't really understand RDF being in the decision process, vice what in legacy thinking from old SQL model and old RDF models. One of the biggest challenges or one of the biggest opportunities when you go to the RDF model is a consolidation of concepts. So what you typically have is let's take the Battle of Gettysburg. Yeah, the Battle of Gettysburg, that could be listed as a topic. It could be listed as a event. It has a close relationship to a location. It could be a couple other different things depending upon which library cataloging system you're using. But to me, all that should really resolve down to one URI within your data set, one unique identifier for that data set. Same thing like with English language or any other language. I may use English language as a lookup field. I may use it as a subject. I may use it as a descriptor for what language my content's written in. But really that should all resolve down to one URI. So when I click on English, I see everything about English and I'm not saying I got to look for English in this table and I got to look in English for this table when you're maintaining all these different things. So that's some of the challenges I see with BibFrame still is there's not a good understanding in some of the way they've structured their classes where they can easily resolve some of those issues down. So when you look at, some of their class structure. So the way BibFrame describes thing is you have a work, and the work is basically the conceptual essence of something that was created. So if I have, in one of the previous example, Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, that was basically a book written by Mark Twain, Samuel Clemens, and, 150 years ago or 100 years ago, my dates calculations are off. But and then that work then would have its instances underneath of it. It was published at this date. It would be, the date it was published is one instance, and then another instance would be it's published on a separate date, on a different time, or it was published as part of a collection in this compendium of Mark Twain works. But really, when I look for Mark Twain, to me as a user, I just want to, as a non-cataloger, I want to see my search results. I want to see Mark Twain. And then when I click on Mark Twain, I could say, okay, it's available to me in these 15 different publications. It's available for, and it's in these video formats or in these audio formats. What you typically see in a lot of places when you search is you may see, based on the old Mark system, you may see all 15 instances of that Mark Twain, all 15 different publications show up in your search results, which is just confusing to the user because they really just want to see Mark Twain. Now, if there is Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, where you should really see Adventures of Huckleberry Finn and then maybe another search results for, somebody's edit, research on the Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, some other book related to it. But the work, which is good in their vocabulary, is they're trying to consolidate it down to the work. But one of the challenges they have, in my opinion, with the instance methodology is they don't properly subclass their instances. So there should be like a super instance class that really just has like a title and maybe a production date or a publication date. And then based upon what type of instance it is, whether it's a book or part of a compendium or part of something else, then you would have a different set of properties, and all those would combine up into one instance. So that from an architectural standpoint, designing the system, all I need to know is that if it's a book, that it's going to have an ISBN, it's going to have this, but it's not going to have like a music works number or some of the other identifiers, because it's not the it's not that type of instance, where if I have a music, it would have some of those different things, or it may have a composer, but I never have a composer for a book because that property doesn't make sense. So those are some of the challenges with BibFrame at this point. What I'm actually building with Jeremy, though, is a way to actually build some of these RDF applications. I can go over some of that if you guys are interested on how we're using the triple store to actually define how the application functions. In all of that is just tied back into our framework, into our semantic server that Jeremy's put together with the Fedora, Blaze Graph, and Elasticsearch. And each of those components are pretty much doing different aspects, where Fedora is our repository, or is our basically our file or digital repository. Blaze Graph is kind of our authoritative data source for all of our data that we pull into it. And Elasticsearch becomes the optimized search index. You know, that when we change stuff in the triple store or Fedora, those changes get pushed into Elasticsearch, which then gives you, you know, optimal performance when doing full text search across your repository. So if you look, let me see if I can share here. So this is looking at that one page I sent you guys to. You can always go to knowledge links here if you're looking for any of our stuff. And you look under products, you'll see the framework and then our documentation as we're building it out. As it states here, we're still in development what we're doing. But basically, what it's coming down to is this is kind of how the data structure is working in here. I have a series of application definition files that are written in RDF, and then that gets fed into Blaze Graph, which is basically a Python application converts that into a Python dictionary, and it tells you how the application functions. So that's how I'm controlling my forms and controlling my APIs and controlling the structure. So that way, if I want to add something to the data store, all I have to do is go in and change those application files. And when it changes application files, then it changes the nature of the application. So the way that kind of works, if we look over here, this is a instance just running locally of just kind of a shell of an application. And when we look at our application definitions over here, all this stuff originates in the triple store, which tells me how I'm defining it. So if I look at, these are the RDF classes that I'm using in the current application. So Jeremy mentioned we were doing schema. So if we look at schema person, it's going to tell me what properties I've added that I'm using. And when I'm adding a person to this, creating a new person, I'm saying it needs to have their family name, given name, their email, their affiliation isn't a required field, that's optional. And then if you actually look at any of these properties, I sit there and I tell how the application is supposed to use those properties. It's similar to doing table definition in a relational database. So I define what the default field type is for that property, and I can change that in a form. I define, you know, this is just a replication here of saying what the URI is that's being used for that property. I say if it's a required property, and then if you look at that link I sent out, it'll explain what a domain and range is in RDF. And if that, what that means is in the triple pattern, it tells you what's supposed to be in the first position and what's supposed to be in the last position, the subject position, the object position of the triple. So by changing those domains and ranges, the application understands how it's supposed to use those properties. And then in the background, the application is writing all the, there's no real query definitions. Queries have to be written when I change the vocabulary, because all those queries are being auto-generated based upon the relationships in the definition. There's a whole bunch of different form paths. So these are the defined form paths. So if I wanted to look at my a new instance form path as I'm building this stuff out, this is just all these pages are showing you what I have defined by the vocabulary. This is my form for creating a quote new instance. And this isn't built out all the way, but again, these are fields. This whole form is just auto-generated based off of the RDF. I'm not hard-coding any of the form into the process. So, but once I change my vocabulary and mark up my vocabulary in RDF, all my forms get auto-generated at that point. So it's really a series of, my RDF application files are really just one big application configuration file, which allows you to then manipulate anything that change the different functionality of the application, modify it without having to go through and worry about rewriting all the queries, taking care of the security, redefining APIs, and all those things that come in whenever you're trying to do application modification. And all of this stuff is then generated with, for those, this may be a little technical for the non-programmers in there, but they're all being generated in these are all being generated in templates, just a Flask template, Jinja template, if for those who are familiar with the Python templates. So it just reads through the field. So if you want to go in and change the way these templates look, you can go in and change the templates here, and it changes the whole application. But it's not, because it's reading through the series of fields that are supposed to show up in the forms and so forth. Again, that may be a little bit too in-depth for some of this stuff. But what it allows you to do is allows you to easily add and remove data fields to your application and way the application functions without having to go through and do a lot of hard coding and accountability on that side. But the way that whole functioning flows is, when you look back here, is once that application's built on the framework, the stuff is sent into various components, and then it gets pushed into our RDF-enabled repository, which in this case is Fedora 4, which gets pushed into the triple store, or goes directly into the triple store. And that triple store, all our stuff here that we're interacting with between Fedora 4 and Blazegraph is solely done through REST API. So if you want to change out the triple store and you want to use Virtuoso or a couple of the other Mark Logic, a couple of the other triple stores are the framework that we built is as long as it has a REST API, then that can send in triple Sparkle queries to the triple store, then it can deal with it. That's one of the challenges with Fedora 4 is you can't do broad sweeping changes across the across Fedora 4. So for those who are not real in depth with Sparkle, let's say I wanted in SQL terms, if I wanted to run an update query that's going to update a bunch of records, you would have to send in if you're using strictly Fedora 4, you have to send individual queries for each record. So that is one challenge with Fedora 4, and that's we've kind of moved away from only storing the digital objects in Fedora 4 and all the other information strictly in the repository. In the triple store, because you can't run an update query that's going to affect multiple objects at the same time with Fedora 4, which is one limitation that can take up a lot of time, processing time, when you have to send, repeated queries across that. Is there any questions on that, or is that too much for, or not what you guys are looking for?
No, I think that was really good. It's really helpful for me. I still have some more questions myself, but I hogged it, so I will stay silent for now. I think we've got about another 12 minutes if other folks want to, if anyone else has questions for Jeremy or Mike. Yeah.
I have a question related to what you were just talking about. So when you talk about using Fedora for storing the digital object and then the data in BlazeGraph, what are you using as your primary unique identifier, and how are you handling identifiers across the system?
So when I run this framework, in my definition is I have it set up so that I can define how, based on which RDF class I'm using, RDFS, or really RDFS class I'm using, how I want to generate that URI for that class. So there's a couple different patterns that I've noticed out there. So you'll see, like, for example, id.loc.gov/subject/, whatever the name of the subject is, could be the URI. Or you could see a similar pattern, and you'll see, like, the UUID, or some other string identifier tacked on the end of it to generate your URIs. So what I'm doing in the framework is, when it's generating the framework, depending on the class, I define what pattern I want to use for new objects, and then it'll generate that pattern. So for example, if I look here, let's say test instance, and I'm making something up here, and I create this here. The pattern I selected for this was to slugify basically the title here. So if I look at this identifier that was generated here, you'll see it's http://idloc/test instance, which is basically controlling off of that. So it's looking in the triple store to see if that item already exists. If it already exists, it would have added a number onto the end of it or not. But the other option is I can go in there and tell it to generate a UUID, and it would generate some UUID that's string unique, which is what Fedora does when you put it into Fedora 4. It's going to auto-generate a Fedora 4 URI, which has basically a long UUID at the end of it. One of the challenges, though, with building that Jeremy and I have found, and maybe it's just a technical hurdle we got to get over, is that with Fedora 4, though, I've noticed is that it's hard to how they reference the first portion of it, basically whether it says local host as part of the URI, or if you want to be yale.edu/whatever going out to the rest of their URI. There is some challenge on getting that to pass back and forth correctly. Because we were doing everything originally when we were doing this open badge initiative was to pass that just to go ahead and just throw everything into Fedora 4, and then the camel routes would then update in the triple store, and we just run our queries on the triple store, and everything was passing through Fedora in the initial standpoint. But what was happening on an application side that was difficult is that once we went to more of a live site, we were getting back, basically we were having to deal with three URIs, and the fact that when I submitted the REST request to Fedora 4, it would return back a response with localhost as part of the URI. And then if I looked in the triple store, it would have how Jeremy had defined semantic server as part of the URI where it was localhost. And then if you went on to the actual website, it would be whatever the website is with the rest of the URI. So I think there is still some challenges with Fedora on being able to handle and define their URI generation. So what we've done is we've gone back to its a conversion within our framework to generate those ourselves and hard push them in everything we can into the triple store, and use Fedora only for the digital objects aspect of it and those items get queried over, pushed over into the semantic stuff. Does that answer your question, Mike?
It answers most of it, but what is the identifier that you use in Elasticsearch? Is that the one that's derived from Fedora or from the triple store?
What you saw in BibCap 1.0, that was just a straight push over from Elastic from the triple store. In the newer version, we'll be using the Blaze graph would be the what we store in our triple store would be our URI that we're going to push into Fedora. Push into Elasticsearch. So there's a couple things that we're looking at in the indexing standpoint is, and I haven't completely decided exactly how I'm going to do it. I'm going back and forth with some of the pros and cons, but is the challenge with putting it into Elasticsearch is that you'll see if you do the queries on the current BibCat is you'll see a lot of redundancy because it's the way things are pushed over because it was just a straight push from one as, proof of concept on how to, hey, can we even get this in there and get this server core set up? My current plan is my forms that are generated and some of my data views that are defined will automatically index into Elasticsearch. So part of that would be grouping all of my identifiers together. So if I have an ISBN, a URI, and so on and so forth, all the 50 different identifiers that are out there, they would all be in one section. So if I want to search by identifier, it would just search into that section in which you can define your queries in Elasticsearch to search different parts of the document. And then you wouldn't really care from a user standpoint if I type in an ISBN or I 10 or 13 or I type in a call number from the user. You don't really care. You have a number, you put it in there, and it will return a result because it'll be searching in the correct selection. As far as the field labels, so there's two aspects of that, and I'm going back and forth whether for the property headings, whether I'm going to continue to use push over the vocabulary name into the JSON object in Elasticsearch, or actually use in kind of my form name. Because in my framework, when I define a form, if you look here on this, what I'm sharing right now, this ANSI and title fields right here, if I was actually looking at, if I was looking at my form definition, or my instance form. Now I look at that property. I define a label name and a field name for that property within that form. So that's all flexible, but the actual property is BF title, even though that may not be displayed, it's just showing title because the bib frame being the property. And which I'm calling basically the property URI for those items. And I define what range. So I'm expecting to have a string and I'm expecting it to be stored. This is going to be used as part of an instance, which is all tied into how the actual RDF vocabulary is structured by ICE. And then the application just reads that. So does that make sense, Mike?
No, that makes a lot of sense.
So what I've done, so this right here is actually basically a JSON object, but it's actually just converted over from the triple store. Actually look at my, property app definitions. Sorry, I'm got a list. I'm looking at the wrong thing here. Let me if you go back over into this definition here, you'll see you can read through and actually how I'm defining this stuff. But it's all marked up into a turtle file that then gets read when the application starts. It pushes it into the triple store, then it does a query that converts it into a JSON object that the framework then can read and manipulate. Any other questions for me or for us?
Yeah.
Any other questions, guys? Yeah, I think we're coming up on the hour too, so I don't want to keep guys longer than we scheduled this either. But this has been really, really helpful for me. And I've taken a lot of copious notes. So it's been nice.
So feel free to either email Mike or I. We'd more than happy to, you know, answer any of your questions you might have or do more of a demo or what have you. For sure.
Great. Yeah. So thank you really also for the link to this documentation. I think it'll be helpful to look at after this call as well.
So what, just so you know, what I'm doing here is really a derivation on what is typically, from what I understand, is typically being done in the industry. Mm-hmm. What's typically being done in the industry is they're treating the graph. There's a concept of a graph, which is basically a bunch of triples put together that represent a thing, which is really basically a doc, basically kind of a JSON document. And what's typically being done, it looks like, is people are modding and addifying, or reading that document, modifying the document, and re-put and pasting that document back up. So they're dropping that whole graph and re-adding that graph. What Jeremy are doing is a little bit more difficult. From the outset is we're doing everything and we're really working at the triple level. So we're adding, removing unique triples from the triple store by dropping and re-adding entire graphs. So, and our thought process is, since everything is going through this framework and it's all interconnected, that we can keep our data store clean because there's no table definitions or other stuff that an application graph database truly has to adhere to, like there is in a SQL database. So that's what our framework is trying to provide, that compromise of flexibility in RDF graph database compared to the clean app, the cleaner data store that a SQL database will give you.
Right.
Because, you know, otherwise you're just throwing a bunch of junk in there, and when you got a bunch of junk, then you got to write a bunch of complex queries to filter that stuff down to get to just what you want. And I know I'm talking a lot, but the other big thing that I've kind of thought about, or the way I look at it, is that when I look at the semantic web world, there's kind of two things that are happening. One is there's an internal side, and then there's an external side. And the internal side is, to me, is how do you take all that information that you gather externally from all these other web sources and clean it, and then put it into what into your data store on how you want to maintain your copy of what's important to you as an organization. And right now we're focusing more on the ability to do the internal side, because I think once we can get that down, then the external part is just building in the filters to shove that stuff into the internal side. But that's kind of the approach we've been taking with it. So feel free to email or ask us any questions as you guys go through that, and we're available to help.
Awesome. Sounds great. Yeah, we'll probably take you up on that. Great. So yeah, thanks again, everybody. Looks like, unfortunately, Lisa lost the audio, had to sign out, but I guess we got the recording. All right, looking at Kevin now. Awesome. So yeah, thanks again so much for joining us and talking with us today about everything you guys have been doing with RDF. And yeah, hopefully you don't need your shovels after all. The snowstorm is coming. Yeah. All right, it was nice meeting you both.